If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home. When I'm Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here in Inside the Ropes, episode number 65. I'm in New York City, a little bit of a delay. Finn's computer broke, my hotel Wi-Fi corrupted, and that's caused a two-day delay for us to get this recorded. But we are here, Finn. How are you today?
I'm very well, Kenny. Very well indeed. We have overcome these technological problems to bring you episode 65, and I'm looking forward to getting stuck in, so without further ado.
Yeah, let's get stuck in. So let's go to the kind of the not so fun news first and get it out of the way. Jim the Anvil Neidhart, you know, one of WWF's big stars of the late 80s and early 90s, part of the Hart Foundation, passed away this week on August 13th. He was 63 years old. He is believed to have suffered a mal seizure related to Alzheimer's disease that he's been suffering from. The seizure led to a fall that proved to be fatal. So he passed away on Monday, I think, during the day, or early morning. Jim the Anvil Neidhart, what's Jim's legacy in wrestling, Finn? You know, you've covered him in various forms for years and years and years. What is the legacy of Jim the Anvil Neidhart?
I mean, it's the Hart Foundation tag team, isn't it, really, that in which he teamed with Bret Hitman Hart. I mean, when I first started watching American wrestling in early 88, they were a big deal. They were still heels. They hadn't turned... No, actually, I think they just turned face because they turned babyface at WrestleMania 4, didn't they? When Bret Hart...
smashed the trophy of Bad News Brown.
Bad News Brown, that's right. That was the Bret Hart babyface turn. And then Jim the Anvil Neidhart, he turned as well, and they got rid of Jimmy Hart as manager. But by then, they'd already been WWF Tag Team Champions for the first time. They beat the British Bulldogs on January 26, 1987. Held the belts until October 27th, 1987, when they dropped them to Strikeforce, who, of course, were Rick Martel and Tito Santana. Really good team. Very underrated team, actually. Rick Martel, really, one of those guys that's an all-time great. No one really talks about him as an all-time great, and he really was such an amazing performer. But yeah, Hart Foundation, it was the classic, you know, Bret Hart was the technician, Anvil was the power man. I mean, I was fascinated when I first started watching wrestling that all the people involved, the manager and both members of the team, had Hart in the name. And I thought it must be made up. And actually, they were their real names, weren't they, Kenny?
Yeah, they were all Harts, but none of them were actually, well, you know, Bret and Anvil and Jimmy Hart weren't related, so...
No, of course not.
I tell you, my favourite, one of my favourite tag team matches I've ever seen, still to this day, and I would recommend checking out if you've not seen it, is SummerSlam 90, 2 out of 3 falls match with the Hart Foundation and Demolition. Excellent match.
That was when they became champs for the second time. And that was Demolition, I think it was Smash and...
Smash and Crush were the official team, but Axe was still there doing the kind of, you know, trying to run in and pretend he's still in the team.
That's right. Bill E.D. was having heart problems at that time, so Crush was added to the team. Probably Brian Adams' best match of his career, which isn't saying a whole lot. But yeah, it was a really good match.
Are you trying to say that some of other Brian... Wait for that. You'll like this one, Finn. Are you trying to say that some of Brian Adams' other matches were a bit chronic?
Oh, very good. Yeah, when Brian Adams was in the ring, it wasn't a case of run to you. It was run away from him. You know? Brian Adams was... Anyway, let's not talk about Brian Adams. Let's get back to the Anvil. But you're right, yeah, the Hart Foundation were a terrific team. He made his debut in 79, I believe it was, and he'd held tag team titles in Stampede. Of course, he'd actually married into the Hart family, hadn't he, Jim Neidhart? He married, was he Ellie? Yeah, Ellie, one of the Hart kids.
So he married Ellie.
That's right, so he married into the Hart family. So he'd held tag team titles in Stampede, also held a tag team title in Mid-South, also held a tag team title in Florida as well. So he didn't just wrestle for his father-in-law's territory, which is something that a lot of the Hart kids did. Obviously, Brett didn't. Brett and Owen, they became stars worldwide. And Jim spread his wings and he went out and did other things as well, which was really good for him. And that's probably contributed to him getting picked up by WWF. So he came in there in 85, I believe it was. He made his debut and then formed the team with Brett. And they were sort of on low card act for quite a while, worked the way up, got over, really good working team with contrast with Brett being the technician, Anvil being the power man. They won the tag team title in Jan of 87 and then held it up until October and then won it again in 1990. And then they dropped the belts for the second and final time to the Nasty Boys at WrestleMania 7. And after that, they went their separate ways. Brett went solo, became Intercontinental Champion, big single star. And Jim Neidhart and Fred kind of struggled after the Hart Foundation tag team split. I'm sure you would agree with that, Kenny.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing for the Anvil was I always liked him. Like, he was always someone who, like, when he returned in 94, and I know that Dave Meltzer had said this week in The Observer that there were potentially plans for Owen and Anvil to win the tag titles in that 94 run, but he then, you know, got fired for missing dates. So. Yeah. And then in 97, you know, they brought him in the Hart Foundation. And I always felt like he was just a good player to have around. And he looked like he could just run you over.
Yeah, I mean, he was a big guy. I mean, he was larger than life. I mean, he was perfect for the WWF of, you know, the cartoon era in the second half of the 80s. Just sort of a larger than life, very animated character. So he was really good for that. But I mean, as an in-ring performer, certainly in the 90s, His work declined greatly, Kenny, and he was not a good performer. They tried him out as a commentator, and that was a disaster. He ended up leaving and joining WCW after the double cross. I mean, and that was just a massive flop. So, I mean, you know, to me, I want to remember, you say, what's his legacy? I want to remember him for what he did in the 80s. That's how I would like, that's how I'm choosing to remember him, for his run with Brett. Particularly the first run, because that was a magical for me, because that was just as I discovered WWF wrestling proper. But as you said, they had a really good run as well, 1990 to 1991. The match with the Nasty Boys was really good as well. I mean, they put the Nasty Boys over and that was a great start for them. So that's how I want to remember him. I want to remember him as somebody who was a contributor, you know, was relevant, somebody who really brought it and was a star rather than somebody who was living off past glories. That's how I prefer to remember wrestlers, Kenny.
It's funny. One thing that always used to annoy me was in 1997, you know the SummerSlam 97, the Hart Foundation were all in different matches. And it always annoyed me that Jim the Anvil Neidhart didn't have a match. It really frustrated me that he didn't have one.
Well, I mean, that was, you know, I mean, the guy was not a good worker at that point. I mean, you know, he just wasn't. So, I mean, at that point, you know, that was pretty much the office sending the message of this is what we think of this guy. And that was the reason why he wasn't given a match, Kenny.
I do love the idea that Jim the Anvil Neidhart is kept off the card, but the Godwins are given a tag match. You know, that's fine.
The reason I'm laughing is that on the, when we've just recorded the Sunday Night Heat review, for Patreon, and we were talking about the Godwins there. That was why I was chuckling.
But WWE did a really nice tribute to him on Monday night. Lots of nice tributes to him on social media. Natalia had even responded. Apparently Hulk Hogan had been spending some time with him recently and trying to get him out of the house a little bit and stuff, so that's nice.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I thought Ronda Rousey was one of the realest thing on probably on WWE TV this year was Ronda Rousey's opening promo on Raw, and I thought she did such a great job. I thought that was the promo of her career so far, and, you know, so heartfelt. You know, fans were really silent and respectful, and then, you know, at the precise time when they were supposed to react, they did, and that was a really nice moment.
Yeah, it was really nice. I think as well the... You know, I didn't know that Ronda Rousey's dad had died when she was 8 years old. So that kind of adds to the heartfeltness of it, really. You know.
Yeah.
So Jimmy Allen Neidhart sadly has passed away. His funeral was yesterday. As we record this, we're recording this on Saturday. Stephanie McMahon was at the ceremony. The Stephanie McMahon was at the service, and so Brett was there, Mick Foley was there, Brian Knobbs, Steve Kern, loads of people were there. So, you know, sad times. But yeah, go watch the Demolition Heart Foundation match on the network if you get a chance. So something else that's pretty interesting in wrestling I wanted to ask you about, Finn, was Chris Jericho had said in his podcast this week that he had actually pitched an idea to a high-level WWE executive about doing Intercontinental Champion versus Intercontinental Champion, given he's the New Japan IC champ. I think at the time when he initially was thinking about it, or he wanted it to be Rollins, so it'd be Rollins and Jericho. 2018's been kind of mad in wrestling. I mean, is that the sort of thing... Could we see something like that in wrestling, do you think? I mean, because... This would not have happened years ago in any way, shape, or form, or even been at a stage of conversation. Jericho says that it was received well by WWE, but he never heard anything back about it.
I mean, I don't think it's going to happen because New Japan and Ring of Honor are doing the show at Madison Square Garden. They are now the enemy, effectively. So it's I just can't see Jericho as New Japan Intercontinental Champion coming into returning to WWE to fight WWE's Intercontinental Champion. Also, you need a long-term deal between the two companies because they're not going to want to do a non-finish. Presumably, if they're going to have a title versus title match, there's got to be a winner and a loser, which means the winner takes both titles.
Yeah, you got to have a finish for that match.
Yes, a match of that magnitude cannot go to a non-finish. You could have done that in 1987, but you couldn't do that in 2018. People would be up in arms. So that would necessitate a business agreement, a talent agreement of some sort, or at least a working relationship between WWE and New Japan. And that currently does not exist. Nor do I think it will exist because of the Ring of Honor and New Japan relationship and the fact that they're doing MSG the night before WrestleMania next year. So I just don't see this happening, Kenny. Basically, it's an impossibility in as things are at present.
Yeah. Speaking of Ring of Honor and New Japan, they did, in fact, after we recorded last week, they sold out Madison Square Garden in 13 minutes.
Wow, it's just incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, so, I mean, is this something you ever thought would happen, that you would see another company be able to do that and be able to run WrestleMania weekend and sell out Madison Square Garden? That must be, I mean, it's surreal for me as a wrestling fan, but it must be even more surreal for you as someone who's covered wrestling for so long. So can you talk a little bit about the context of what that actually really means?
I mean, I think after last year's... I think it was a record performance. Sorry, this year's record performance by Ring of Honor, just before WrestleMania, they drew their largest crowd, didn't they, in New Orleans?
Yeah, but it's about 5,500, something like that. Was it 5,000 or 6,000?
So you can just see that they've got momentum, and it's not so much the Ring of Honor name that's over right now, but I think it's the talent that they've got. Like, I mean, look at All In. People say, oh, you've got to effectively brand a company. You know, it's branding, that's what sells tickets. Well, what did All In mean before it started, before they put tickets on sale and sold them all in half an hour or whatever it was? Didn't really mean anything. But you've got a group of wrestlers there who have developed a tremendous loyalty with their audience through social media and various other things. So they're now in a position where they've got these people that will travel and will pay through the nose to see them perform, buy their merchandise, et cetera, et cetera. So they managed to actually build their own audience. So where they go, and obviously we don't know for sure that Cody Rhodes, Kenny Omega, the Young Bucks, and others are going to be on the Ring of Honor and New Japan Super Show at Madison Square Garden, because we don't know what's going to happen next year. But you would imagine that they're going to be there. You know, you would think that many people have bought tickets based on the assumption that they'll be there. So, I mean, we're really in a position now where a lot of acts have got themselves over and they've built an audience that's willing to pay to see them. And then you take the significance of the MSG being this venue that WWE has played since 1960 in its various forms. And I think most wrestling fans understand the significance of this. And a lot of wrestling fans are just excited, I think probably just to go to MSG, to watch something other than WWE there. So I think MSG, in a sense, has got the draw, is a draw as well, just to actually go and see wrestling there. The fact it's WrestleMania weekend and you've got so many fans in town anyway who will come in a day early, because why not? Let's check this out. It's the first time they've ever played there. Let's be part of history. So I think it's just, it's like the you know, as you use the cliche, it's almost like the perfect storm of a wrestling type thing where you've got these acts that are over, you've got a promotion that's in the ascent, on the ascent. You've got an amazing amount of, you've got a huge amount, a huge number of wrestling fans in the area at that time who have money to spend or at least can save up. They've got given plenty of notice so they can save money and go and see this show. So I just think there's a lot of factors that have contributed to this. I don't think it's really as significant as it once was, Kenny, because, I mean, once upon a time, WWWF would play the Garden every month. They would be there every month, and it was their venue. In recent years, WWE hasn't played it that often, so it doesn't really feel like it's Vince's arena anymore. You know, especially since they play the, you know, the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. That almost seems like their home arena in that area now. I mean, obviously that's where TakeOver is taking place tonight. It's where SummerSlam's taking place. So it doesn't really have the same sort of significance that it would have had, say, in the 90s when they were still playing there. I think they were still running every month in the 90s, or at least for most of the 90s they were. So because they're not, because WWE doesn't replay play the Garden that often now, it doesn't feel as big as it once did. But it's, I mean, it's obviously still huge.
What do you think WWE's kind of, not retaliation, but what is their response? Do you think that it's going to get to a point now where is Madison Square Garden just no longer going to be WWE's main place and they are going to live in the Barclays Center? Or do you see them throwing Madison Square Garden a bone of like a Raw or a SmackDown, or, you know, to kind of give them something to kind of be like, you know, hey, we're still here? Because it kind of feels like WWE either have to give MSG something or they can't really complain.
Well, I would agree wholeheartedly. If you go back to Raw 25, I thought they would have been at MSG. You know, obviously they were at the Manhattan Center, weren't they, for part of it?
Yeah, they were at Manhattan Center and Barclays Center. And even the Raw 25, 24 special on the network, Daniel Bryan said, you know, Barclays Center is the WWE's home in New York City, which I thought was an interesting way of, because I don't feel like Daniel Bryan would have worded it that way. I feel that was verbiage given to him, which is, you know, it's weird that that's now what they consider the home.
Well, yeah, I mean, they've been playing there now for, what is it, it's about, it's at least, was it maybe 2011? I know they did do a TLC event there, I believe they did.
Yeah, well, I mean, the first year that they did SummerSlam was 2015 in Brooklyn. That was when they really made it. But yeah, I think there was a TLC or something 2012, 2011.
That's right.
And that's when they started.
Yeah, right after it opened. So I think they've definitely, the fact that Raw 25 wasn't taking place at the Garden and instead they played the Barclays Center, I think that really, and as you say, Daniel Bryan had stated that the Barclays Center was now WWE's home court in the New York City area. Maybe MSG's feeling a bit miffed. Maybe they, you know, their noses have been pushed out of joint by this. Maybe they feel a bit, you know, disrespected by WWE for not running events at their venue and instead choosing the Barclays Center, which I imagine is a lot cheaper to rent, by the way. I'm sure that's a factor because I believe MSG is very expensive to hire and very expensive to... I know at one point they used to tack on an extra charge if you were going to film TV there, which was a reason why WWF, as it was then, didn't really run MSG for TV tapings. So maybe, you know, that's part of the problem as well. But, I mean, I don't blame MSG for allowing another wrestling company to come in and run a show there. I mean, it's not like WWE was going to be running a show there that night. If they were, you could say, oh, well, WWE's upset because they were wanting to run MSG that night. Well, they weren't. So why shouldn't another wrestling company or companies be permitted by MSG to run shows there? I mean, you know, that's the free market. You know, Vince is big Republican. He's all about the free market and free enterprise. So, you know, he should be congratulating Ring of Honor and New Japan on their success. You know, and as I said,
that's going to happen.
Well, as I said last week, I mean, this is really good for Vince. This is good for WWE competition. He needs to be driven. He needs to be pushed. And if he feels like another company is gaining ground on him, obviously Ring of Honor and New Japan are never going to be as big as WWE. But if he feels like they're gaining ground and taking some money that his company could have, maybe that will motivate him to do the things that people have been pleading with him to do for years.
There you go. So, I mean, obviously the main part of this podcast is going to be us talking about SummerSlam, which is coming up on Sunday, or tomorrow even. A lot of people have been kind of down on SummerSlam this year, just kind of saying it doesn't really feel like a SummerSlam, it doesn't feel as exciting. But Raw and SmackDown this week with the go-home shows, Raw, we kind of had the big angles where Ronda Rousey in the corner of Ember Moon against Alexa. We had Paul Heyman turning on, well, revealing that he had not really turned on Brock Lesnar and sort of, you know, spraying stuff in Roman Reigns' face. Then we had the angle at the end with Dean Ambrose's big return. He's going to be in the corner of Seth at the pay-per-view. How did Raw do as a go-home show, do you think, to get people at least a little bit more intrigued by SummerSlam?
I enjoyed the show. I quite enjoyed the show this week. I thought the opening stuff with Ronda Rousey, we talked about the Jim Neidhart thing when Alexa Bliss and Ember Moon, Alicia Fox. I enjoyed the opening. I thought Ronda Rousey did really well. I thought their crowd was as into this as any sort of main event angle or scenario that you could name. So I felt that was really, really, I thought that was a really hot start to the show. What do you think, Kenny?
Yeah, I thought Ronda was really good. I'm into the Ronda and Alexa match. I don't know why. I think I like the idea of the story is that Alexa's going to get killed when Ronda finally gets to her, so I'm kind of keen to see what they do. And Ronda's kind of knocked it out of the park with every match that she's had on pay-per-view so far. I mean, I know it's only been two.
Yes.
But still, you know, the Nia Jax match, which I thought was really good, really exciting. And I just don't think they're going to allow Ronda to be in a match that's boring. So I'm kind of keen to see what they do on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed the Alexa Bliss versus Ember Moon match this week. I thought it was a really good match. Lots of noise, fans really into it. I thought it was a very good match for Ember Moon. She was replacing Natalya, who of course wasn't there. Moon had Bliss beaten with the Eclipse when Alicia Fox ran in for the disqualification. And Rousey flattened Alicia Fox afterwards. I mean, what a pasting. I mean, it's just like, when you watch her throw the female competitors around, you really do feel sorry for the likes of Alicia Fox, don't you?
I know. Poor Alicia. I mean, I feel like Alicia probably thinks that now it wasn't the best idea for her to scream at Ronda's husband WrestleMania weekend. Maybe shouldn't have done that.
Yeah. But it's just like, she's doing the throws and Alicia Fox is just getting bounced all over the place. So I thought it was a really hot start to the show. So I really enjoyed that. To answer your question about SummerSlam, you're right, yeah. There's a lot of matches on the show that are reruns. There's not that many matches on the show that feel like you have to see them. I think we talked a little bit about this last week, Kenny. It does feel like Lesnar versus Roman Reigns. I think this week's Raw did heat that match up. Obviously it was a ruse. I predicted that. Can I just say I predicted that? Of course it was a Paul Heyman ruse.
You did predict it, to be fair.
Yes. So it wasn't really that hard to predict. There's some matches. Let's not dwell on, are we going to be doing our SummerSlam predictions, Kenny?
We are, yeah. So before we talk about SummerSlam predictions, we've also got the SmackDown Go Home Show, where, you know, the focus on that was obviously Samoa Joe and AJ Styles, where Samoa Joe read out a letter from Wendy Styles. The SmackDown Go Home Show we had a promo with Carmella, Becky Lynch, and Charlotte. I actually thought all three of them were very good on the mic.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, they've worked in the whole thing about Carmella just being, I mean, Charlotte said to her, "You're a diva living in a women's era." Charlotte also said to Carmella, "You know that you can't hang with anyone in this division. You wonder why the WWE universe doesn't respect you." So they've worked in the real feelings about Carmella into the storyline, which I think was smart. I think that was something they had to do. So, I mean, this match, it is an interesting match, actually, Carmella versus Charlotte versus Becky Lynch. Not so much for Carmella's involvement, but for what's going to happen between Charlotte and Becky Lynch. And I think there's going to be something's going to happen between those two because they've been far too pally. And that doesn't last in pro wrestling, does it, Kenny?
When I thought you were going to say they've been far too pally. That doesn't wash with me. For me, the thing on SmackDown that was just sensational, those video packages from Miz and Daniel Bryan, can we talk about them for a moment? My God, they were good.
They were terrific. They were really good. I mean, just going all the way back to 2010 and just seeing how young Daniel Bryan looked, just how fresh-faced he was and browbeating him and belittling him at every turn. And then, you know, Daniel Bryan stands up for himself. I mean, I've written about that endlessly. At the time when it was going on, it was all very strange. And you're thinking, well, what's going on here? But now it all sort of seems like it was part of a master plan. Like as if they were thinking in 2010, right, let's book this. Let's make Daniel Bryan look. And then in 8.5 years time, we'll run this feud between Miz and Daniel Bryan and it'll be great, and everyone will say, oh, people say that WWE doesn't plan ahead, look at that, they planned ahead 8 years. So it almost feels like it was planned from the start, which of course it wasn't, but that's, you know, that's good booking, that's good writing, isn't it, going back and making use of something you've done previously and weaving it into a storyline you're doing today. So yeah, really good promos. It just very real. Just you can believe what I like about it, Kenny, is you can believe that these two guys do not like each other. And you don't get that often enough in WWE. You just don't, because it's so sanitized. You don't, and it's everything's so micromanaged and overly scripted. But with this Daniel Bryan Miz thing, it's got a very realistic feel to it, hasn't it, Kenny?
It does, and you know, not to give a quick plug, but if you go over to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/InsideTheRopes, lots of interview content going up over the weekend. And I did an interview yesterday with The Miz, which is a great interview, and most of it is on him, not me. But he's just so good, you know, at the interview, he talks about Daniel Bryan, he talks about the Talking Smack thing, and at the end of the interview, he just says, you know, Daniel Bryan's not even signed his contract. He's like, why do you people support him? I'm here for 2 more years. I'm happy, you know, and just he's excellent. He really is. He's stepped up his game, and I hope that they've got the potential to have one of the best matches on the show. You know,
yeah.
Eight and a half years in the making. Bryan's got a point to prove because his comeback hasn't been as great as people wanted it to be. Miz can go when he needs to. You know, he had that great match on pay-per-view a couple of months ago. I think it was Backlash with Seth Rollins.
Yes.
So I'm excited for it. I'm really into it. So, but before
we go. Daniel Bryan has said, sorry to interrupt you there, he has said that his contract's 90% finalised and that it's possible that he could sign at any point. And I think it's very likely that he will sign before their match tomorrow night, because WWE is going to need to know that Bryan's on board, because one you've got to assume that it's not going to be one and done between Miz and Bryan.
You yeah, no, 100%. But the good thing is you can add that realism in there. You know, you can add the contract thing in there and see what happens. So yeah, interesting stuff. Go check out our interview with The Miz. Got interviews going up all weekend with Ricochet, Elias, Carmella, Becky Lynch, Rusev, Samoa Joe. Plenty of stuff going on. Before we talk about SummerSlam, which will be our last thing, it's a bit of a shorter podcast this week, there have been rumours that at Survivor Series they might actually pull the trigger on doing the Four Horsewomen versus Four Horsewomen storyline. Would you like to see them do that?
Yes, I would do. I mean, I'd like to see more female. There's a lot of really good talent, a lot of good, really good female talent in NXT. I'd like, you know, Shayna Baszler, I've talked about her before. I'd like her to be called up. And there's other people I'd really like to see them get called up. And I think if something like that were to happen, it would be treated as a huge, huge deal by WWE. Obviously, we've got this Evolution pay-per-view taking place in October, so maybe something will happen there on that show to set up as you say, the 4-on-4 Survivor Series elimination match. So yeah, I'd absolutely like to see it. I mean, you've got to figure that Shayna Baszler's time to be called up is approaching. You would think, I don't know whether she's going to lose the title tonight to Kairi Sane, but it kind of feels like she should be on the main roster to me, and I think she can do a lot there, and I think WWE will look after her. I think because they'll see, well, we can team her with Ronda Rousey, then at some point Shayna can turn heel on Ronda Rousey, then they can do the match. So I think they'll look after Shayna Baszler on the main roster. So yeah, I'd like to see that match.
Yeah, I mean, for how good Shayna is already is scary.
It really is, absolutely.
So, okay, let's do SummerSlam predictions now. I just want to let you know there's not going to be a SummerSlam overrun this weekend purely because of time, and I don't have the... I don't have SummerSlam issue 65 here, but what we'll do next week is we'll just do a little bit of a longer overrun next week, which fits in with the fact that we're going to have so much fucking stuff to talk about.
Yes.
With TakeOver and SummerSlam and all that kind of stuff. So we'll do something longer next week so you guys get your fix. So let's get to the card. We've got 13 matches in total, 3 on the pre-show and or kickoff show and 10 on the main show. So let's go through them. The Cruiserweight Championship, Cedric Alexander defends against Drew Gulak. Who is your pick and why?
I haven't really... Do you watch 205 Live each week, Kenny?
I don't, and I think part of the reason for that is that... I'll give you... Cedric Alexander, to me, is just not a very interesting performer. So for that reason alone, I kind of hope that Drew Gulak gets the belt, because I'm probably more likely to tune in at some point if Drew Gulak's doing something interesting with the belt rather than Cedric.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it's going to be time for title change. Cedric's held that belt for long enough. Time for change. And as I said before, 205 Live needs a charismatic guy who can be the figurehead of that division and that's going to motivate people to tune in. Cedric's not that guy. They need somebody else as champion. So, yeah, I'm hoping for a title change as well.
Then we have the B team, Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel, defending the Raw Tag Team Championships against the Revival.
Yes. You've got to figure that, I mean, everything about the B team has been unpredictable and unexpected. So it's, you sort of think, well...
Is that code word for shit?
Well, yes, that's, I guess, polite words for that word. I mean, the B team are just like, it feels like a practical joke at our expense. That's what the B team feels like. So,
I would love to see the Revival take the belts, but I feel like the B team are going to keep them, sadly.
Yeah, I think you're right, because the B team, you think, well, these guys are still, okay, they're undefeated since they formed this team, but I mean, they don't come across as champs, they don't come across as winners. They're a bit of a joke as an actor, you know, it's custard pies at, you know, 10 paces. I mean, it really is, it's just a bit of a clown show. So I'd like to see the Revival become champs, but it doesn't feel like the Revival have really been elevated into a position where they can be taken seriously as champions. So I can well believe that the B team will retain. That's my prediction.
Yeah, I'd love to see Revival lift the belts, but I don't see it happening. Then the final match on the kickoff show is Rusev and Lana teaming up against Andrade Cien Almas and Zelina Vega. Now, what I will say is, check out our interview with Rusev when it goes up over the next couple of days on our YouTube channel, because he talks about some pretty interesting stuff about Vince McMahon is trying to help Rusev being a babyface now. Like, he likes working with Rusev, apparently. So that gives Rusev a little bit of momentum. And apparently the reason that Rusev was taken out of that casket match at the Greatest Royal Rumble is because they wanted to have him go babyface. But the only reason the match was put back in was because the Prince of Saudi Arabia, whatever, really wanted Rusev in that match. So, it's an interesting interview to kind of explain a couple of things. But Rusev and Lana against Andrade and Zelina Vega, what are you thinking, Finn?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a shame that it's on the pre-show. I think this is a really good match. I think all four have done really well. I imagine that Almas and Zelina Vega are going to win, probably after Aiden English, his interference backfires yet again. And maybe that will, at that point, Rusev will you know, Firehead in English, or maybe in English will join forces with Almas, Zelina Vega briefly. But I'm predicting that Almas and Zelina Vega will win. But I think it's a shame that this match is not on the main show. I think it deserves to be on the main show. And I think Rusev is somebody who did really well in the match with AJ Styles at Extreme Rules. And Almas is a guy who I think can be a huge star as well. So I'm hoping that this is going to be good for both of them. And I like Lana and Zelina Vega as well. I know that as wrestlers are not that great, but I think as characters, I think they do add a lot to both men. So, but I'm predicting Almas and Zelina Vega to win. But for me, it's a shame that it's not on the main show.
Yeah, I think Zelina Vega and Almas are going to win. I think sadly it'll be at the attempt of an assist from Aiden English.
Yes.
And it'll backfire. So
yes.
Okay, main show. It's funny, I actually was talking to Finn Balor. It's one of the interviews we did yesterday, and he's talking about Brock Lesnar and you know how big the match could be between Brock Lesnar and Finn Balor and all this kind of stuff. And then I just kind of said to him, no, he was talking about Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns and those kind of guys. I said, you know, there's just an aura when they're out there that you don't get in a lot of places. And I said, do you feel the same way when you're facing Baron Corbin? And he just laughed.
Yeah.
So kind of says it all. But Finn Balor, Baron Corbin.
He's always been very diplomatic as Fergal Devitt. And that's what's got him this far. Keep it up, Fergal.
He has. Although the thing is, so you know, it's no secret to everybody here on Inside the Ropes that, you know, on the Raw rundown, David and I, when we talk about Raw, whenever Baron Corbin comes up, the Constable Corbin thing comes up, I play the theme tune from The Bill, the mid-90s TV show from the UK. And so I'm interviewing Corbin yesterday. I just kind of went, oh, listen, you're not going to understand this, but whenever we do the podcast, I actually play this theme tune to a 90s TV show from the UK. And he laughed and he went, oh, no, I know about that. I said, how do you know about that? And he said, somebody sent me a video of my Titantron with the bill with this song. He said, this should be your new theme. And he said, but it's fucking terrible. I said, it is terrible. So look out for that interview.
Baron Corbin and Finn Balor is one of those matches that we've already seen loads of times. Who needs to see it again? Do you need to see it again, Kenny? Because I don't.
No, I do not. I'm good. I'm done on that. Thanks.
He's going to win. Surely he's going to win.
Yeah, Finn Balor wins.
To draw a line under this feud, please.
Yeah, Finn Balor will win. We'll move on. I'm just hoping this match is like 6 minutes. Just make it short and sweet.
Yeah.
Shinsuke Nakamura defends the US Championship against Jeff Hardy. Who is your prediction, Finn?
Yeah, my prediction is it's going to be Nakamura to retain. But this is a strange feud for WWE because it seems like Randy Orton and Jeff Hardy is the real issue here, not Nakamura and Jeff Hardy.
Randy Orton's lurking in the background. I think Nakamura will retain because Jeff Hardy will be about to win, but Randy Orton will stop him from doing so.
Yes, I think so as well. I mean, it is generally WWE doesn't do these feuds where it's you know, clouds the issue by adding, you know, outside forces or outside influences or outside a third party, because it likes to keep things, you know, really clear and simple. So this is a strange one. This is, you know, atypical for WWE to do this. I imagine that Randy Orton will be involved in some form or fashion, and Nakamura will win. Doesn't feel like it's time for Nakamura to lose. Doesn't feel like it's the time for Hardy to win the title. So, I'm not really... This is a match that I'm not looking forward to. If this match wasn't taking place, I don't think I would miss it at all if it wasn't on the show, Kenny.
No, I mean, I'm hoping it's one of those ones that can kind of, you know, be a pleasant surprise, but it's not one of the big ones on the show.
No, it's not.
Right, so from now on, you know, going forward,
One of the medium-sized ones.
Yeah, that's true. But now, I mean, the rest of the matches we're going to talk about are fairly, you know, mentionable matches. So we've got Carmella defending the SmackDown Women's Championship against Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair. I am going to predict that Carmella will retain the championship because of Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair's dissension. What do you think? Are you as pessimistic as I am, or are you going to be optimistic?
No, I agree with you, because they've set out the stall this week. As I said earlier, Charlotte was making it clear that Carmella is not in their league, doesn't deserve the title, can't hang with them. So it's the classic reverse psychology of like leading us in one direction only for them to, you know, throw the curveball and, you know, outfox us by delivering the thing that we're not expecting. So I think it'll be Charlotte and Becky will be there. They'll be battling. Something will happen. Then Carmella will sneak in and score the pinfall, score a fluke pin, run off with the belt, you know, cackling, while Charlotte and Becky are there yelling at each other, which will then lead to something else. And hopefully one of them, Becky Lynch, I hope, turning heel. We've been talking about this forever. Will you turn her, for God's sake?
It's all we keep talking about. I feel we're just like we're in Father Ted with the two big placards saying down with this sort of thing.
Well, the thing is, like, when WWE is presenting the same thing over and over again, it's sometimes quite difficult to say something different about the same thing, isn't it?
Yep, that's just our life now, Finn. That's what we've got. So the up next, I mean, this, I don't know if this changes in any way because of Monday, but Dolph Ziggler with Drew McIntyre in the corner against Seth Rollins with Dean Ambrose in the corner. What's going to happen? Who walks out with the IC title?
I think Dolph's going to retain the title because I think Seth and there's not much of a tag team scene right now, is there, for Seth and Dean to go after? I mean, you would think, oh, then maybe they'll
challenge.
Well, exactly. I mean, maybe they'll, you know, win the title. And then they can elevate the tag team title back to where it needs to be instead of being this effectively like a opening match championship that doesn't really mean anything. So I can't imagine that Dean and Seth Rollins are going to split, because I think they like Seth as a babyface and Dean's just come back. He'll probably turn at some point, but not immediately. So I don't know. It kind of feels to me like if Seth Rollins wins the title, that's sort of a step back for him as well. Because I think he did an interview this week and he was really talking a lot about the Universal title. That's his goal. He wants to be there. So I think after this feud with Dolph ends, he's going to be pushed in the direction of the Universal title. So I think Dolph's going to retain. I'm not quite sure how it's all going to play out, but I think Dolph will retain. What do you think?
I think Dolph will retain, but I think it will be because of a heel turn by Dean Ambrose.
You think so?
I think that's where it's going. I think it just feels at the time Seth's a great babyface, Dean would be a great heel. I'm gonna go with the exciting option, which will probably be my downfall.
Yeah, I can see it happening, but I just think it would be rushing it if they were to turn in this weekend. But there again, you know, this is going to be the last Seth-Dolph match. So what's Seth going to do after SummerSlam if Dean doesn't turn heel on him? So you could have some of that, Ken.
But I do want to actually, before we move on, actually, something about Seth Rollins that I forgot to bring up. He was asked about The Rock. He was asked about, you know, there's rumours that The Rock wants to have one more match, blah, 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 blah. So here's what he said. So they'd said, you know, there's a rumour at WrestleMania it's going to be Roman Reigns versus The Rock. When you hear that, what's the first thing that pops into your mind? And he said, I'd like it to be Roman Reigns versus Seth Rollins. And then they say, you know, what about Seth versus The Rock? And Seth said, that's cool too. Don't get me wrong. I love Rocky. I think he's great. Love everything he's done for the business. But my gut, my first instinct says, we don't need him. We don't need him. If we are not the guys who can main event WrestleMania, then how are we ever going to be The Rock? How are we ever going to be Stone Cold Steve Austin? We can't hold on to these guys forever. We just can't. To me, let's do Seth Rollins, Roman Reigns before we do Seth Rollins, The Rock. That's me.
Yeah, I read the same interview, Kenny. Yeah, hear. You know, I've written that many times.
It's so nice. It's so refreshing to see somebody who's in wrestling that understands it.
Yeah, but I mean, as I wrote in my Q&A column this week, Kenny, I wrote about The Rock in this week's Q&A.
What a lovely segue. Continue.
Yeah, I wrote about The Rock and whether or not he's going to wrestle again. So I explained my reasons for why I think The Rock's not going to return to the ring. So
there you go.
Check that out. check that out. Yeah. So, but Seth's right. I mean, the whole part-timer thing, I mean, they've been so reliant on them really since 2011, really, when The Rock came back. And it's been, we've been in this endless sort of cycle of never getting behind the full-timers and elevating them to the top of the card so that they seem to be the equal of the part-timers. And that means that then WWE's forever reliant on the part-timers, you know. So Seth's absolutely right. I couldn't agree more.
Up next, we have Braun Strowman, who is the Money in the Bank briefcase holder against Kevin Owens. Winner gets the Money in the Bank contract. Strowman can lose by any means. Do you think Strowman keeps the briefcase or do you think it goes to Kevin Owens?
There's no way Kevin Owens is winning this. Braun is keeping the briefcase. We know this because they've already advertised Braun Strowman versus Roman Reigns matches for the house shows. And it just, Adam Strowman's had a bit of a funny year. You know, I mean, he won the Money in the Bank briefcase, but he's kind of been on the back burner for a lot of the year, hasn't he, Kenny? You know, he's a guy that hasn't really, go back and look at his involvement in WrestleMania.
That was when it began to, because the WrestleMania thing was absolute bollocks.
In hindsight, it was. It meant nothing.
Oh, no, listen, I said it at the time. I knew at the time. One of the best things you can ask yourself, if you look at the Braun Strowman character, you know, is it going to work if we do this with Braun? Would Stone Cold Steve Austin do it? That's the kind of thing you're looking for. You're looking for something, you know, something that's cool, that's fun, or whatever. And Braun Strowman is that a lot of the time. But, like, you know, having a kid as his partner, nah. So I think Braun Strowman needs a kind of injection of life in some way.
Yeah, he's just been treading water, really, since WrestleMania. I think they'll have a good little match, him and Kevin Owens. I think it'll be entertaining, but I can't see Kevin. I mean, Kevin Owens is not in a position right now where he can cash in that briefcase and become champion. He's not. He's just not there anymore. He hasn't been there for a very long time. So there is no way Strowman is losing that briefcase to Kevin Owens.
Yeah, I think Braun's retained. I think Braun is the thing in reserve that could make the main event more exciting, potentially.
Yes. Yes. I mean, Jim Ross, when I did that interview with him earlier in the year, he really put Braun Strowman over. He was saying that Braun's, you know, could be the guy. So, yeah, that was an interview I wrote for Patreon as well. Nice little plug there, Kenny.
There you go, just plugging the Patreon away. Up next, we've got the SmackDown Live Tag Team titles, the Bludgeon Brothers versus the New Day. Please, dear God, let the New Day get the belts off these fucking boring mallet bastards.
Yeah, I mean, watching Sanity on this week's SmackDown just made me think, well, why are Sanity not in the Bludgeon Brothers position? They should be the ones who are holding the title. I mean, they're the ones who should be in the main event, in the title feud with the New Day, not the Bludgeon Brothers. I think Sanity have got far more potential to be, you know, the menacing heel act than the Bludgeon Brothers have. I mean, we've seen, let's face it, we've pretty much seen the best that we're going to see from the Bludgeon Brothers, and it hasn't really been very exciting, has it, Kenny?
No, it's not. I mean, Eric Rowan is not great. Luke Harper's really good.
He is, but in this role, I mean, this role is just like, I mean, it's like he might as well be wearing handcuffs. I mean, he's just been held back. I mean, this guy could be such a player, you know, he'd be like some, you know, Kevin Sullivan style character from the 80s. You know, I think he could be something special if WWE really allowed him to speak and allowed him to really play a, you know, like a psychopath type character, or at least, you know, as crazy as you can be in the PG version of WWE. So yeah, I'm hoping New Day are going to win as well, and I'm hoping that Sanity, who were very competitive against New Day on this week's SmackDown, Kenny, I'm hoping Sanity are going to be put into the Bludgeon Brothers position and given a real chance to grow as performers. So you just give them some promo time, just give them a push. I mean, they've done like nothing with them. I mean, this week's SmackDown was probably their largest contribution to WWE since they were called up back in April.
Yeah, I would agree. So New Day need to win, and also, yeah, I liked to SmackDown that Sanity almost got the win, and then you know, they almost got the win from New Day. Biggie had to break up the count. So hopefully it's a sign of sanity to get some stuff to do. Well, hopefully it's a sign of Nikki Cross coming up on Tuesday, but, you know, we'll see. Yeah. Up next, though, is the top four matches of the show. Daniel Bryan versus The Miz. What I think is so great about this is I could see this literally going both ways.
I can as well.
Which means I'm going to cheat and try and ask you to predict first so I can maybe steal your answer.
Well, I think that Daniel Bryan is going to sign his contract before the match because WWE is going to want to know that Bryan is on board for the long haul, so it knows it can confidently book the finish of this match with this knowledge that he'll be around for the rematch. So Bryan's got to, if he's staying, and I think he's staying for all the reasons that we previously talked about, he'll be signing his contract before the SummerSlam match. And I think Bryan needs to do that anyway, as out of respect for WWE. So I think that Miz will win this match. If Bryan, regardless of whether Bryan signs or not, if Bryan's leaving, if Bryan does not extend his contract, then Miz has to win, obviously. But I think even if Bryan does sign his contract, and maybe they'll sort of do a bit of a work shoot angle here and they'll work this in and they'll withhold details of Bryan signing his contract from the public. Bryan will sign and then Miz will beat Bryan and everyone will think, oh, Bryan's leaving. And maybe they'll work that into the storyline, you know, because it's something that, as you say, Miz was talking about to you. Bryan's been talking about in interviews. People are aware of what's going on. So I think either way, Miz will win to set up a rematch. But I'm predicting that Bryan will re-sign and then they'll have another match for the next pay-per-view and we'll see where it goes. But I think Miz is going over at SummerSlam. What do you think?
I think like 51% of me thinks Miz. Maybe I just wanted to win because he was such a good interview for us.
Yeah. But if they are doing a rematch, and I'm convinced they will do a rematch because I'm convinced that Bryan will resign, then Miz has to win the first match. Otherwise, what's the point of them doing a rematch?
The good thing is, no matter who loses, the loser will have to react, and that's in wrestling and stuff at its best.
It is, yeah.
AJ Styles versus Samoa Joe for the WWE Championship. Samoa Joe is going to become the champion, and I hope in my head.
Well, AJ Styles, as we know, he just feels quite stale as champion, and that's due to a lack of interesting contenders. I'm not really a big fan of Samoa Joe because I think he's, you know, pseudo hard man act. I've just seen him do it. I've seen him do it for well over 10 years, and I've seen him do it a hell of a lot better than he's doing it now. I mean, I think the guy as an in-ring performer is nowhere near as good as he once was. I think he's really slowed down. He's nowhere near as crisp and sharp in the ring as he used to be. I think this will be a big test for him because Styles is a guy. I mean, look at the match with Rusev, Extreme Rules. That was really good. I mean, even though the matches with Nakamura sort of went on a bit and, you know, the finishes were dire. I mean, the content of, I think the last one at least anyway, was pretty damn good. So this is going to be a big test for Joe. So I think Joe's really got to deliver. I don't think Joe's really done a whole lot of interest this year in the ring. Can't really name a match he's had this year. I know he's been injured. I can't really name a match he's had this year that's really, you know, really blown me away. Can you think of a match that he's had this year that's been really good?
No, I mean, he hasn't been on TV or pay-per-views a lot. The Roman Reigns match at the pay-per-view, I think part of the issue with that was that the crowd were just not going to enjoy it, you know, because it was Roman Reigns. But I think you're right, it is a big test for him. I like his act, and I don't know whether that's because I've not seen it before, so maybe it's new to me. There was a if anybody gets some time in the next 24 hours, WWE put up a documentary. It's on YouTube for free. It's on the network as well. It's called WWE Chronicle, and it follows Samoa Joe from the night that he returned, the night after WrestleMania this year, up until now. It's an excellent documentary, and really, you know, shows you him and his journey back, and. You know, he's got a point to prove and all that kind of stuff. So he's got a point to prove. The match needs to be good. If it's not good, then it's not a good sign for him. But I think he's going to be able to pull it out of the bag. If he can't have a good match with AJ Styles, you know,
there's a problem. Good match. Exactly. And the thing is, if Styles wins, who's he going to wrestle next? You know, if he retains the title, what's next for Styles? There isn't really, I mean, there aren't many other contenders on SmackDown that he hasn't already faced in long programs. So it kind of feels like it's time for a change. Samoa Joe doesn't feel really hot enough to me to be champion, but maybe he, you know, maybe he can change my opinion on Sunday, Kenny. You know, maybe he can really, really produce something. I hope he does. And I'd like to be excited by the prospect of seeing Samoa Joe perform again. I'm not at the moment, but, you know, I'm willing to give him a chance.
Okay, so we'll see what happens there. Ronda Rousey faces Alexa Bliss for the Raw Women's Championship. Is Ronda walking out of Brooklyn with the title?
I don't know. This is a tricky one. This is a real tough one to call. It seems like a foregone conclusion that she's going to win, doesn't it?
Which immediately makes you question, is she going to win?
Yeah, I mean, can they get away with another screwy finish? Can they get away with another sort of non-finish? I'm not quite sure how they're going to play this one. Maybe they're going to leave it until the women's pay-per-view in October for her to become champion, because that would get lots of publicity. And I think if she's going to become champion, she'll probably win the title there, just because, you know, that will get that mainstream media attention that WWE craves. So I don't think, I think Bliss is going to retain, but I can't quite work out how she's going to do it. And I mean, if Bliss beats Rousey, is that going to harm Rousey's aura if she loses? I'm not sure. What do you think is going to happen?
It's really hard to call. But I think Alexa's going to keep the belt somehow.
Yes, I think so as well. I think so.
Main event time, Universal Championship, Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns. What do you think?
Well, I mean, on Raw this week, Reigns said it ends this weekend. It ends at SummerSlam. So I think it will
end. Can I have that in writing?
Yeah. Well, that's what he said. And the whole way it was framed on Raw was that this would be their final match. I will say that, you know, we had the angle there where Heyman's trying to strike a deal with Roman Reigns before he reveals the ruse. I think it would have been better if Heyman had given Reigns the agreement in principle and then left it with Reigns as like a cliffhanger. It's almost like, you know, as you know, when we've been doing the Sunday Night Heat reviews, we've got these cliffhanger endings. We don't get enough of those in WWE of 2018. And I think if Heyman had given him this agreement in principle, then left, leaving Reigns with the agreement, and then they'd gone to the ring at SummerSlam, and Heyman had done to Reigns what he did at the end of the angle before Lesnar came out and destroyed Reigns on Raw, I think that would have been a better way to play it. I think that would have made the match much more interesting this weekend, Kenny.
Yeah, you know, I think they've taken some of the intrigue out of it. They've taken some of the... But then, you know, there are parts to it. I mean, apparently Brock Lesnar has a closed-door meeting at 4 p.m. tomorrow where they're going to decide his future, which, you know, it's so funny that that's when that's happening. So it's kind of up in the air. I think I don't want Brock Lesnar to walk out of Brooklyn with that belt.
No, this has got to be the final match. It has to be. It looked to me like Lesnar had lost a lot of weight. Did you notice that? It looked like he's already in training for a return to fighting.
Yeah, it did.
Shape. Reigns, I mean, we've said this before, I know, but this has got to be the final match. I mean, we're still sort of in disbelief that it's happening again, you know, without Lashley's involvement. So I think Reigns is leaving Brooklyn with the title on Sunday. I mean, he has to. He's got to. I mean, Lesnar will then be leaving. I don't know what he's going to do, but he will be returning to WWE. I don't know when, but I mean, I can imagine that he is going to go back to UFC, do the fight there. But WWE is going to want to keep him for sure. And they'll come to an agreement on a new deal, I'm sure. So, but they need to get that Universal title off him and get it back in circulation full time.
So you don't think we're going to see an appearance from the Money in the Bank briefcase holder?
Well, I mean, possibly. I mean, that could happen. I mean, maybe Reigns doesn't win and Strowman cashes in. I don't know. I mean, it just sort of feels like if Reigns doesn't beat Lesnar, then it just sort of feels like, how can they continue to promote him as top babyface? Because he's been striving to regain the title, and the babyface in Vince's WWE has to win in the end. I mean, the babyface has to, because we're supposed to believe in the babyface, even though lots of people boo Roman Reigns. Reigns is framed and presented as the top babyface, so he really has to win. It's possible that he'll win, and then Strowman will cash in and then defeat Reigns after Reigns has beaten Lesnar. But I think Reigns has to beat Lesnar at SummerSlam. I think that result, we have to see that result to draw a line under this. Otherwise, if Strowman gets involved, then it means that the Reigns versus Lesnar feud is not settled.
Oh, God, can you imagine? Yeah, just settle it.
Exactly. So possibly Strowman gets involved, but I think after Reigns defeats Lesnar for the title.
My big hope is just that when we're talking about this next week, there's some exciting things to talk about.
There will be. Have faith.
Take us out of SummerSlam and let us be excited about the fall season. So, Finn, where can people come and say hi, read one of your ebooks, or just generally give you some abuse?
My website's finleymartin.co.uk, as people know. They can find me on Twitter at finleymartin or at powerslam online. Where can people find you, Kenny?
You can get me at KennyMC1985 or inside_the_ropes. You can get tickets for all of our upcoming shows with Sean Waltman and Billy Gunn or Pat Patterson or Edge at insidetheropes.co.uk/tickets. Do go to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/insidetheropes, to see interviews with Elias, Ricochet, The Miz, and many, many more over SummerSlam weekend. Also go to patreon.com/insidetheropes for bonus content, our retro Sunday Night Heat podcast, and David Saunders and I on Monday will be doing a SummerSlam review, so that'll be available as well. So, to play us out this week is going to be the music of Roman Reigns, because he takes over every part of my life, and I don't like it, so he may as well take over the end of the podcast. No, actually, I don't need to do it for this one, because we have a theme tune that we play to go out. Never mind. Okay, fuck you, Roman Reigns. Okay, that's it, we're done. Finn, enjoy the rest of your weekend.
And you, Kenny, I look forward to next week's recording, and have faith. SummerSlam's going to be good. It's going to be a good show.
I'm keeping the faith, just like Bon Jovi. Bye, everybody. If I be tonight, if I'm sad tonight.